Mama, I want to start off by giving you your flowers. I really appreciate you. I'm really grateful for you. You give me a lot of courage to take risks and do things that I feel uncomfortable doing. And I really appreciate you always being in my corner, regardless of what I'm doing. So I want to thank you publicly for this. And thank you for supporting me. I remember I led a Bible study here in Miami. This was months ago now. And it's the first time I was leading a Bible study here in the States. And I invited some people and nobody ended up showing up. So for about 30 minutes, I was at this restaurant and I was talking to one of the staff members about the material that I was going to go through. And all of a sudden you walk in the door. And I remember mentioning it to you in passing about a week before, not thinking that you put it on your calendar or showing up, but you show up dressed up, ready to go. And I'm like, wow, like, thank you. And it meant a whole lot to me. And it really means a whole lot that you're here right now. So thank you.
You're welcome, babe. Thank you. Yeah. I love you. You know, when you said you were doing your Bible study and it was your first one.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so grateful to be able to be there. I'm so proud of you. I love you. I want to give you your flowers as well. Thank you for making me a mommy. You know, and introducing me to love like I've never experienced before. So I thank you as well.
Thank you,
and
Mama.
And it's an honor to be here.
Thank you, Mama. So what Coach Calm is about is helping people show up prepared for every season and every single arena that they may step into. And I love one of the groups that we're focused on serving is the 450 in the NBA with our expert demographic. And the experts aren't just the 450, it's the wives, it's the kids, it's the entire families. Because once a player reaches that platform of being amongst the elite of elite in the NBA, their whole family is elevated to that platform as well. That comes with a whole lot. And I would be doing people a disservice not to mention the people who are behind the scenes, manning the fort, holding it down, literally. And you are one of those people, and you've done it excellently for years. And I'm amazed at the position that God has put me in to learn from such amazing people, both on the court and off the court. And you're at the top of that list off the court. So I want to hear.
Bugs, you're just going to make me cry like the whole time.
That's why I brought these tissues. That's why I brought these tissues here. And really, the way you and Dad met, it's such an interesting story how y'all met in high school. And you can talk a bit about that now and how the career has gone through so many different seasons, from high school to college to pros to out of the pros to back in the pros again. And you've been through so much. So I want to hear a bit more about that journey and whatever you care to share with the listeners of the podcast. I would love for you to.
Yeah, well, that journey, you know, it really is so interesting. And it wasn't a journey that I planned or, you know, I just felt along the way, every step of the way, including this moment, that it has been God.
Yeah.
You know, your father, as you mentioned, our story was that we met in high school. We were pen pals in high school. You know nothing about that.
No.
We wrote letters to each other in high school, and that was our way of communicating, because long distance calls, we didn't have cell phones or anything like that. That was very expensive. So we were pen pals in high school. And then happened to go to college in the same city. I went to Howard, the Mecca, as I tried to get you to go, but that's another conversation. Uh-huh. And your dad went to Georgetown.
Yep.
And so we happened to be in the same city, and that's how we started dating during that time. And you're right, it was high school through college, through the professional career, and it's been an interesting experience. I'm grateful for it all, for every step of the way, because again, I believe, you know, that's how we're here. And you know, like I said, I couldn't have written it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always believed and thought like God had great things for me in this world, and this whole experience, like you said, there's only a small number
yeah.
of people that get to experience this lifestyle. And it was a blessing the whole way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
how have you been able to serve people through the game of basketball?
Well, you know, basketball, because it is going to this level, the professional level, it is such a large stage, and it's not just the players that are on that stage, it's families. And, you know, so the work that I do in serving the community, you know about, and some people may know about, Honeyshine, the mentoring program that I have, that we have, you know, it started because when your dad's career, when God brought us back here to South Florida, I used to live here when I was a little girl. And when basketball brought us back here to South Florida, I would go visit the amazing woman, Miss Annie Lou Johnson, who used to take care of me in the same house way down in Gould's, where, you know, my mom would come pick me up and I was shooting craps across the street at the pool hall as a little girl. You know, I could shoot some dice, you know, that's what I knew. And I remember us having to get on the floor and get on the ground when they were fighting outside because we didn't know if bullets were coming through the walls or the windows. And that's what I remembered. But when I would go back and visit Miss Annie Lou, I was just so happy to see her. She was such a blessing. Her and Uncle Head were such a blessing in my life. And I remember seeing groups of girls walk around the neighborhood, and I'd wonder, which one am I out of that group? Had it not been for the mommy in my life or Miss Annie Lou or Mama Rainey, the women in my life. And I know what God had allowed me to see, you know, in college, growing up in Vegas and living the life, you know, that God had blessed me with. And I had just wanted those same little girls to have that same opportunity. Like if they just saw what was up the street, what was over on the beach, you know, the hotels and the just different opportunities out there, they could do whatever they wanted in this world. And God placed it on my heart. When people say, how did Honeyshine start? It was God. It was God that placed it on my heart and said, Tracy, that what you've got to experience, I knew everyone didn't grow up with a mom like me. You know, I had the best mommy in the world, the greatest mommy in the world, and I'm so grateful for her, but I knew not everyone had that. And people would always say, how did you turn out okay? Whatever okay is, growing up in Vegas or, you know, growing up and having the life that you did, how did you make it happen? And it was because of my mom. You know, and I again, I just thank you for acknowledging me as a mommy. You know, because I know deep in my soul that it's because of my mom that I am who I am.
I'm noticing that more as I get older and how God has strategically placed people in my life to be able to redirect me and prevent me from going down paths that I'm not meant to go down. And that's only by the grace of God. And I think about how growing up in the city of Miami, when I got to college, I would have friends come down to Miami and visit. And when I come home, granted, college basketball was a full-time job. So when I come home, I just wanted to be around family. And they would hit me up. It's like, yo, we're going to live. We're doing this and that. And it's like, I'm at the crib. Like, and they would.
You may see my mama or my dad.
You know what? You know, and I go out sometimes too. But it's like, it's funny because I saw Miami in such a different way growing up than most people see it. And having worked in hospitality here with Boucher Brothers and some of the other places that I worked in the city, I'm like, wow, I'm grateful that I grew up in the way that I grew up. And now that I have the wisdom and discernment to help people see the city in a completely different way. Because there's some amazing people down here, some amazing communities down here, and amazing ways to serve. And one of the things that I'm most proud of our family is that we made and are making an impact in the city that we grew up in. Because you've never done growing up, right? And thinking, I'm 26 going on 27 this year, and you and dad got married at 27, and you all came to Miami at what, 25 26?
I guess so.
26. So at my age, you got here to the city of Miami.
So 26 at your age. And then married, I think, 28. So I know I'm supposed to hold the mic up, but, you know, that whole experience, this is why you never know what God has planned. And you can't look at your life and compare it to someone else's. That's where we come up short when we start to do that. Where if you're thinking like, oh, by this age, I'm supposed to be married or in a committed relationship or career-wise, that's where we fail when we start to compare, including to our parents, including with our peers. You know, so I just hope that you don't do that because it's not necessary.
No, it's not. God gave me a word a while back in Psalm 91. It says that whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. And what he said to me is, if you're in my shadow, you're not in your Father's shadow. Because the plans that God has for me are completely different than the plans that he has for Dad, that he has for you, that he has for Micah and Elijah and the rest of our family, my teammates as well. And it's so grounding knowing Jesus because it allows me to come back to this place of, oh, like I'm okay. Like, for I know the plans I have for you, plans that prosper you and not harm you, to give you hope in a future. So it's really encouraging.
And I think that's what I don't like the term enemy or anything like that, but that's that negativity that wants to introduce you to things like, oh, comparison. That's the thief right there. That's where you're robbed when you compare yourself in any way, shape, or form. Even if you compare yourself today to yesterday, you know, or to what you have, what you desire, you know, in the future, that's a thief. So, you know, I hope that you continue to remember that, because there are some days we remember it very well. And then some days we're like, oh man, like I should be further along. I know I've done it myself, you know? So as a mom, my prayer is that, my children are comfortable in their truth and comfortable where God has them and not looking backwards or too far ahead. Amen. Stay in the present, because this is the gift right here.
Amen.
Because it's not promised. Right?
On that point, we've been through a lot in the past 3 years as a family. Lots of change, lots of growth, and it's so beautiful that we're able to see God through it all. What you brought up earlier, Nana passed away a few years ago, and we talked about this on the last episode. And it's wild to think it's been those 3 years. And being in that season, we were in a transition moving from the house in Pinecrest to where you are now.
Temporary house.
And then we were in a temporary house.
Yeah, it was three moves in a year.
And it felt overwhelming. It's like, why are we moving so much? But looking back, it's like, wow, like I'm so grateful that God allowed that to happen, because
every step of the way
because Nana passed away in that house and we never have to go back to that house.
So the whole experience, this is where I know where God is leading us, and hopefully even in this conversation, is just to remind people it's those tough times, they're going to come. He didn't say they weren't going to happen at all. They're going to happen, but it's how you move through it. There were days during that time period. 2020, I think it rocked the whole world. And I know for me, you know, having to move three times, live in a temporary home, live in a hotel, having to make sure my kids were okay, having to homeschool, having COVID, having my mom transition like within days of a diagnosis, you know, and then my birthday, a big milestone, and then going through a divorce. But when I tell you, even in it, I've seen God at every step of the way. Because it was God that brought our family together. Like, we would have never been together had it not been for COVID. And it was God. Like, with mommy coming down to Florida, and those of you who don't know, my mom, Nana, lived in Kentucky, and Trey's brother, your brother Elijah, he woke up one morning, he was like, Mom, I'm not sleeping well, I'm not eating well, I just want Nana's food. She got on that plane days later, came down and cooked all of his favorite things, then helped me pack, and she wasn't feeling well. This is a woman that lived on 13 acres, cut her own grass. We just got her to stop cleaning her own gutters, took care of her animals, lived by herself, ate what she wants, smoked what she wants, did what she wants, all of that. You know, but she got on that plane because her grandkids called her. And she listened, you know, and that was God, because she would have been up there stuck during the pandemic. But it was, we were all together. So thank you, God. So what I have learned through that experience, and I think what we all need to learn through those tough experiences in our lives, is to see God every step of the way, because God is orchestrating it all. And it will be used for something great. For our highest good. This place where I sit right now, this moment in time, thinking back of all that heartache, all that pain, all that what I felt was suffering. But God, it's so worth it. You know, it's so worth it because I see his face. And my mommy transitioning, the blessing in that, I miss her every day. Not a moment goes by that I don't miss her. She's my ace, but I know in that moment when she transitioned that she, as much as I love her, as much as you all love her, as much as the world loved her, in that moment when she went home to glory, she had never felt such love in her life. And my mother got to feel that. Again, I'm the luckiest girl in the world. And then my kids got to be there for that. But God. That's why I tell you too, like, no matter what you're going through, it's not easy. You're going to have it, but stay out of here. You know, and even this, our hearts betray us too. But when you listen to your soul and your spirit and you're connected to your truth, you can make it through anything. Through anything, babe.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
I remember just how everything was orchestrated, like how I ended up in Miami during that time too. We were playing a game in Orlando, had flown down, and then the NBA had shut down their season, and I didn't have to get back on a plane again. I just hopped in a car from Orlando and drove down to Miami, one of the last games of the year. So for all that to line up, and we had all the cousins in the house. We had you, Auntie Lisa, Mike and Elijah, like, we were all in that place, the dogs.
Together. Hadn't been there like that in years.
No, we hadn't been, like, it was like a family vacation in a way. And to see Nana off that way was was really special, and we all had our time with her. And, wow, it was like this, it's humbling, too.
Yeah, it really is. It's like, so, God, you love us that much.
Yeah, it's really, really humbling. It's like you can't complain because you see his goodness in it all. And man, like, even the questions that we do have, it's like, you know, he knows better. He knows why that had to happen. He knows, like, Righteous High. Like, I remember getting the idea for Righteous High in that house, short, like, minutes before Nana had actually transitioned. And I remember the last words I spoke to her, all that, and it was just like, it was this peace that surpasses understanding. You know, this peace that surpasses understanding. And I really know that strength is weakness. How it says in 2 Corinthians 12:9, like, in our weakness, his strength is made perfect. And like, wow, that was such a humbling time. Like, God, this is where I'm at. This is where I'm actually at. And Nana was at that point. And like you said, it's so beautiful to see the strength that she had to be in her life and in so many ways to so many different people. She was able to finally be taken care of by people who she's taken care of.
And she hated that.
She hated it so much. It was so humbling. And I know, thinking back now, like, the Lord was in it all, and how he got her to the point. I believe she's in heaven. I know that getting her to that point and seeing the faith of us, seeing the faith of, there's no other option but to believe. And it's amazing how God works all things for good, and is still working things for good. So
all things for good. And then, you know, with mommy, mommy's nature was, you know, we talk about God and spirituality and all of that all the time. And she was, her take on it, I know she believed, she said she believed there was a higher power.
Yeah.
But she would always say, man wrote the Bible. Man's a damn lie.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't trust anything from man, from, but she knew there was a higher power because she, and that's how, what's so interesting is that's how I came to know God, by watching how my mom was loved and saved along the way, like from being saved from this one burning building and this situation and so many different things I saw as a little girl.
Yeah.
Like, I've always had that conversation and that relationship with God. Yeah. And I had it even more, even though my mom was the reason we went to church.
Hmm.
She wasn't the one going down to church because she didn't trust them. She was like, they lie. She knew how they treated her and, you know, and what, how they were doing, you know, and she would always, you know, say, be careful of the ones that pray for you because they might be the ones that pray on you. Like, she was, she, she knew there were a lot of people that weren't doing right, you know, but they ran to the church every Sunday, you know, and so I'm grateful for that. But it was because of her that we would have to go to church. And we even had Jehovah's Witnesses on, so she was going to get us the word one way or another, whether she partook or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think she just wanted y'all out the house.
That too. That too.
And it's important to preface for those who don't know Nana. Nana, I posted about it on Instagram. It's up on my personal page. And before you were born, before Lisa was born, Nana was pregnant with Lisa. Nana was married to a white man, and Nana is a white woman, was a white woman. And she had her three kids from a previous marriage taken away from her because the courts at the time, I think it was either in Ohio or Kentucky.
It was in Kentucky in 64.
Yeah.
And the judge says 20 years from now, it's not going. She married. So the reason she was, had her children taken away, because she moved from Kentucky to Cincinnati with her children. Mm-hmm. That's where she met and married my father.
Mm-hmm.
And during this time, it was against the law for a white woman to marry a black man.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was pregnant with my sister Lisa in 1964. And her ex-husband took her back to court to get custody of her children. Mind you, she had taken her children to visit her family.
Yeah.
When she went to pick them up, they hid them from her.
Wow.
So she never saw them again until she saw them in court.
Wow.
And then when she went to court to get custody, the judge says, 20 years from now, it's not going to matter. Right now, it's a civil rights matter. Granted custody to the father. The father stands up and says, well, I don't want them. I just don't want her to have them. Mm. Granted custody to her parents because they said they would take them, and if she got rid of my sister, Lisa, they would, whatever that meant, they would buy her a house and she could have her kids back.
Mm.
So she had and I remember, you know, I had never seen my mommy cry my whole life.
I never seen her cry either.
Until you were born. And her, my brother, Elvi, he was killed in a motorcycle accident, her only son. And that was the son from her first marriage. She was killed in a motorcycle accident. And I had never seen her cry. And I said that, Mommy, like, I've never seen you cry. And she said that Christmas she lost the kids, she left every tear she had on that tree, decorating that tree, as she's pregnant with Lisa, you know, by herself, you know. And I had heard that story before, but it wasn't until that moment where I realized I had a child of my own.
Yeah.
You know, and the pain she must have felt.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the only time I ever saw her cry.
Yeah.
You know, and she always had to be the tough woman.
Yeah.
The tough one in the neighborhood. We always lived in black neighborhoods. She had to be the crazy white woman.
Hmm.
That was her way of protecting us. And she did a great job.
Yeah, she did a hell of a job. Yeah.
A great job of doing that. Like, I wouldn't trade her for, like, it was just my sister, Nana and I, really growing up. We had Blanche, you know, and on her side of the family, but no one from her family. And even on my father's side, we really didn't have family there. So, you know, she was our everything.
Yeah.
She was my everything.
Yeah.
All of my life. And I used to want to put her in my pocket, like, just to protect her, because she was older than the other moms, but she needed no protection at all.
Yeah. it's really, I just want to sit with that for a second, what you're saying, not needing any protection at all. It's comforting knowing that. Like, I've definitely worried about you sometimes, and I learned when I was in New Zealand that there was really nothing I could do, in the sense of, like, New Zealand, where I was living, is literally the farthest place in the world from Miami. So it's like, well, God's really, he has to be in control. The control freak left me because I had no choice. I'm halfway around the world. So really, really learning to surrender that, and trusting God, most importantly, that, like, he's going to work out everything for our good and take care of everything. And it's really comforting knowing that.
Yeah. And so when you mention in New Zealand, I can tell you as a mom that what's comforting for me, like, you could go anywhere in the world. Yeah. You, your brother and sister, I want that for them too. But the reason I feel peace with you going to the furthest point in the world is because of your relationship with God. Mm. I feel that if you have that relationship with God and you know whose you are,
yeah,
you can go anywhere in the world. And that just gave me peace where, yeah, I was fine with letting you go to Russia or wherever, yeah. Yeah. You know, because there was a peace in, yeah, that.
And it's really like a seed that was planted, because it's been growing over time, each place that I've gone all around the world, because I'm realizing, like, whoa, like, this is really up to me. Like, my relationship with God is my relationship with God. No, I'm no longer living vicariously through another person's prayers. And as powerful as it is to have a praying mother, shout out to all the praying mothers out there. I need to say my own prayers. I need to cover myself. I need to cover my family. And it's a personal relationship, a personal walk. And it's wow. It's really about trusting that everybody will get there at their right time. And it's taken me a minute to see that too, because I've definitely been one who trying to push faith on people. And I just finished this book called Boundaries, and I absolutely loved it. I cried through the whole entire book. It was amazing. And one of my biggest takeaways from that is that we're responsible to people, not responsible for them. And something that you and I have talked about before too. And it's like, I'm responsible for me. I got to make sure that I'm doing the best that I can in my walk, and making sure I step into places with a full cup, so that when I'm with people, I'm pouring out what it is that I already have, right, rather than grabbing for scraps.
Right. And, you know, with mommy, what I appreciate about her teachings, like, for me, like, I always felt like she was the most judgmental person on the planet.
Yeah.
But if I really sat back and thought about it, she was the least judgmental, because she was like, whatever they want to do, whatever you're doing in your bedroom, that's your business. You know, a lot of people get caught up in that and in concerning themselves with how other people are living. You know, it's like that in the eye,
the
plank in the eye. You know, we're so concerned about how other people are living or what they're doing in their bedroom or what they're, you know, how they're living. It's your walk.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, no one was able to go with mommy.
Yeah.
As much as we loved her, as much as we wanted, you know, something specific in that experience, you go solo.
Yeah.
You know, it's your relationship with God. Wow. It's one-on-one. It has nothing. I can't take my kids with me. You know, I couldn't have taken my partner with me. No one. It's you.
Wow.
You know, and you have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
But when we spend our time judging or criticizing or concerning ourselves with everyone else outside of ourselves, that's when it gets heavy.
Yeah.
That's when it becomes a load that we can barely bear.
Yeah.
We have our own stuff to work through.
Yeah.
And when you mentioned how you were working to lead people, you're supposed to lead people, but you're not supposed to tell people what to do. But that comes with maturity. Everyone's walk with their faith, and, you know, that it's, there are steps to it. There are levels to it. In the beginning, I remember telling my mommy, "Mommy, you have to pray. Mommy, you have to do this. Mommy, you have to do that." She would cuss me out. every time with every cuss word under the sun, you know? But at the end of the day, it was her walk.
Yeah.
It was her journey. Who am I to judge her?
Yeah.
You know, but we just naturally do that. And I think with moms, we tend to, and I can say that for me, because I feel like that way with you and with you and your siblings, but I know I was that way with my mom. We tend to judge moms with a through a different lens. Like this lens where they're supposed to be so perfect in every way because they are moms. And, you know, we're pretty good most of the time, but we're human. You know, and this is where the grace comes in. But I feel that as young people, you tend to give that grace more once you've experienced some sort of maturity, whether it's having your own family, you know, or your own hardships or experiences, however it comes, you know, I think you get there eventually.
It's for me, it's been doing the work and really stepping back and seeing where I am. Like I said before, I'm 26 and you had me at 27, and to think of myself having a child.
Take your time, Trey.
To think of myself having a child next year, I don't feel super overwhelmed by it, to be honest with you.
Well, good. What I'm glad you're not overwhelmed, but just take your time.
Still thinking about learning more about you. Like even in this conversation, I'm learning things about you that I didn't know, and being able to do that with somebody I've known for 26 years is really fascinating. And I remember some of the conversations I had with Granddad before he passed. I'm like, wow, I didn't know about that. And even after he passed, I found like film rolls. I didn't know he took pictures like on a film camera.
Yeah, he used to enjoy that.
The same way I shoot on film and thinking like, oh, that could be something that we talk about. That's water under the bridge. Like being able to have the conversation and be curious, be genuinely curious about why somebody is the way they are is really a blessing. And another thing I'm learning is like, it's not on me to, it's on me to deliver and ask the question. It's not my responsibility how they receive it per se. You understand what I'm saying?
Like what?
Like I can ask you a question. I can ask you out of curiosity, and in being curious and asking you questions, it's my responsibility to ask the question and present something in the best way possible that I can. It's not my job to receive it. I got to take the person in mind, take their thoughts, their concerns, their feelings in mind, and I present it the best way I can. Understand what I'm saying?
Kind of. But like it, with receiving it, it's however you receive it. But I feel like if we have our filter, as long as we don't take it personal.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's where we tend to go left, is when we take someone's response or approach personal. And that's human nature to do that, because it's like, wait, why are you acting that way? Why are you doing that? What does that mean? But, you know, let's not take it personal. I think that makes life a lot easier. That's hard to do.
Yeah.
You know, because so many things are personal.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you feel hurt or, you know, pain or neglected in some way.
On the topic of that, how have you learned to do that in basketball? So before we sat down, I was telling you.
I used to take you. You better tell the people. I used to take you. My defense. What? You better tell the people.
You stay fouling.
Whatever.
You stay fouling. So you have experienced a lot of success in basketball and a lot of loss, and you've seen it in a different way than most people, because you're not out on the court playing, but you still have to deal with.
But I was in the gym. What Kobe say? I was in the gym. I was in the gym somewhere. I allowed you to be in the gym somehow.
Oh, my goodness. But, how have you learned to... So where I was going with this question, last night, the Heat lost in the NBA Finals. And I teared up. I cried. And
I wanted them to win too, but I am beyond the days of crying over basketball. Maybe win. Elijah or you or something, I may get it. No, I'm still not crying. I'm at the point. I'm not crying over basketball. I did that. I had to be the sane one when everyone else was crying over basketball or frustrated or angry over basketball. Uh-huh. One of us had to keep it together.
So you were always the one that was keeping it together.
At some point, yeah, I had to get over it a little sooner mm-hmm. because it was so intimate and so personal mm-hmm. for your dad, you know, took him longer to get through it.
Yeah.
You know, so if both of us are jacked up because of a loss, then what happens to y'all? you know, what happens to the rest of the, you know, we gotta, and I'm sure that probably maybe got on his nerves sometimes as, it's okay. There's always tomorrow. Uh-huh. It's like, get off me, you know. Yeah. No. But someone had, you can't, it, when you really think about it, I'm so blessed because of basketball and I know how important it is because it's a big deal. It's a lifelong journey for some people to reach that pinnacle. It literally is blood, sweat, and tears. Yeah. I've seen it and I know, I've witnessed, observed what it takes to reach that.
Yeah.
It's a lot of sacrifice.
Yeah.
There's sacrifice with family, there's sacrifice with fun, there's sacrifice in so many different areas to reach there. You can't just go about your regular every day and just dilly-dally to reach that pinnacle. No, it comes with sacrifice. Yeah. So in understanding that something is going to have to be sacrificed, I decided that it wasn't going to be my family.
Mm.
You know, it wasn't going to be our home life. Mm. You know, you still had school to go to. You still had friends and dances and, you know, your own basketball. So if we're jacked up over this, you know, it takes us all this long to get through it, then we're jacked up. So that was never an option.
How did you get good at setting boundaries when it came to navigating the on the court, being this way, being having to maneuver in some of these circles, and then stepping into my basketball games where I'm sure you got questions like, oh,
I still get questions about the Heat or this. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be focused on yours, yelling at your ref, you know, all in your game. Can't see, you know, just that was, I look forward to that. That's that was exciting for me.
Yeah.
But having to be able, I had to leave it there because I saw how intense it was for your dad.
Hmm.
Your dad did not, he wasn't able to just right away leave it there because he lived it. Like it was literally blood, sweat, and tears. Like I, as close as I was to the game, I could never imagine, you know, his viewpoint of it. Like, cause I wasn't, you know, I was in near the gym, in the gym, making sure he was able to be in the gym, but that they're on the court, you know? So that's their world. But in understanding that even now, when it comes to basketball, people still think that you take it so personal.
Mm.
Like you, like it's a big deal. Like I cheer for the Heat. I'm a Heat Nation for sure. But I can't, I got too much stuff to do. I got kids relying on me, my own kids, my honey bugs. I have other kids relying on me, life. Yeah. I want to do other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so in a way I hope that was a help in some way, even with your father, like for him to get to a place of being able to balance it, you know, where it, he took it very personal all the time. That's why he's a legend.
Yeah.
But hopefully you get to a place where you realize, you know what, there's so much more to this.
Mm.
There's so much more in this world that is happening. And thank God that we have this outlet. You know, look at it that way as opposed to, oh, we're so sad. Now we're going to be sad all summer.
Yeah.
We outside. We are not sad.
What advice would you give to your 26-year-old self on draft night?
I was there on draft night. Well, my hair might not have been as big because I did have big hair then. No, on draft night, just, I think I was pretty present. I think I was very present in that moment. I don't know. Thank God I didn't know what I knew at that time. Because I might have ran.
Yeah.
You know, I might not have, you know, hung in there.
Yeah.
So God gives you what you're supposed to know, but it was all a blur.
Yeah.
Thank God there are pictures or videos, because it really is all a blur, you know, because life goes on in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, and then me being a graduate of the Howard University, you know, that mindset of looking at the whole draft aspect and how I felt like guys were, you know, objects and, you know, their, how much they weigh, you know, where they come, their statistics and things like that, you know, certain things of it I didn't appreciate. But it's all a part of the game.
Yeah.
It really is.
When did you realize it was a business?
When did I realize? There are a few opportunities where I moments where I realized it was a business. For sure, I realized it was a business. Your dad's negotiations, because you know, from Charlotte to Miami and that whole thing, that was eye opening. You know, realized yes, it's a business, and they are commodities.
Yeah,
you know, and that's what that is.
Yeah,
so. I think during negotiations, I realized it was a business. When they would lose, I realized it was a business. When they would win, I realized it was a business. Yeah, there are different moments where I realized it was a business, but for sure during negotiations. Because at the end of the day, it is a business. It's not personal. As personal as it may feel, it's not personal. It's a business. Yeah. These organizations are spending millions of dollars. This is a billion-dollar industry.
Yeah.
You know, billions of dollars. And so it's about business. And so what I appreciate during that time when your dad played was that I felt like, you know, they carried themselves as businessmen a lot of time. Here, it seems these days, it's definitely more casual, you know, but there was something about that era, especially that Pat Riley era. Pat Riley was about business. Yeah. You know, you came to look like a, and so looking back now, sometimes you'd be like, why couldn't you relax to wear whatever you want? But it's a business.
Yeah.
So you, you know, approach it as such.
What did you learn when Dad had his kidney transplant in the early 2000s? He was really at the top of his career in terms of performance, just getting off of a gold medal, and came back and witnessed the birth of Micah sitting over there on the couch now. What was the learning point that you took from that place in his career?
Well, in that moment, the whole, you know, it was, that whole experience was a whirlwind too, because it was, like you said, 2000, I was pregnant with Micah. You all went to Sydney, you, Nana, your dad, you all went there to Australia. I wasn't able to go. There was they practiced in Hawaii. It was me by myself home. So I was all in my emotions, making scrapbooks for anniversary gifts and all kind of stuff, just all in my emotions. Yeah. And I just remember feeling like I just wanted my mom. I just wanted my husband. I just wanted my baby or something. But I just kept telling myself, Tracy, you just have to keep going. And then, you know, when your dad made it back in time for your sister's birth, that was such a special moment. It was like, I felt like through all of it, I'm telling you, Trey, I see God in everything. But he made it back right in time. 20 minutes later, she comes out, you know, waiting on him all the way from Australia.
Yeah.
You know, she waited on him. I prayed that she would wait. So, and then for him not to feel well, it was 2 weeks later, to the day, within the same hour that your sister was born, that we got the news that he had a kidney disorder.
Wow.
Kidney disorder. And I remember, I still, that painting, I still have it. It was hanging in our room at the time, and it was an image of a woman holding a man. His head was bent down in her arms. And she was holding him, consoling him. And I remember your father hanging up the phone, and I'm hugging him like that. And I look up, and that picture's right there. And like it's like a reflection of what we're doing. This is why art, all of that, we've talked about that before, what you have around you, you're to be mindful of. But I remember it was within the same hour that we got the news, and I was just so like, what's going to happen? Your dad didn't know what was going to happen. They had never had someone his size. Mm. You know, I had just given birth. And yeah. I remember mommy was there. Nana was in town. And I said to mommy, I was like, mommy, what am I going to do? Like, they can't tell me what's going to happen with my husband. You know, I just had a baby. I have two kids. What am I going to do? And she looked at me and she said, you're going to keep going. Like, what would have happened to you and your sister had I given up? Mm. Whoa. Like, that was the moment. I was like, whew. Like, air just, whew. Like, wake it up, shake it off. You got to keep going.
Yeah.
You know, because I was really like, I felt broken. I remember being in the shower even just like crying, like wounded, like, because I'm thinking like, he's not going to be here. Yeah. Like, I have to do this by myself. Like, wow. What is happening? And so when mommy said that to me, what would have happened to you and your sister had I given up? Mm. It was like, girl, get it together.
Yeah.
Keep going. So what's next? And when your father had his, I remember we were back and forth between New Jersey and here and trying to make everyday life normal while he played basketball. And I remember the day that he went in for surgery. I had such a peace.
Yeah.
I slept. Like, yeah. I had such a peace. I knew he was going to be fine.
Yeah.
Like, God made it. And there was chaos all around, people and relatives and this and that. But I just knew in my spirit that I had peace about it.
Yeah.
And so I knew he'd be fine. Basketball was the least of my concern. Wow. Of course, he wanted to play more. But I could care less about basketball. Yeah. I just wanted my husband, you know. Yeah. And so I just had peace about it, and I knew he'd be okay with that. And here we are all these years later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. It's interesting how that moment has led to so many different things in terms of how I view basketball. And I remember ESPN being in the house at that time when we were in New Jersey and just seeing the cameras.
And Coach Thompson came to do the interview, yeah.
Yeah. And it's just amazing how it's a business and it's a family in a lot of different ways. Like, I'm so grateful for growing up in this space. And sometimes when people ask me questions, it's like, well, you wouldn't really get it. Like, it's really deeper than that. I can do my best to explain it. And I think that is what I'll do through this podcast and through my career in terms of helping people really conceptualize the fact that, yo, like, when I'm talking about Patrick Ewing or AI and D Wade, like, these are my dad's coworkers, the same way your dad may have coworkers, the same way your mom may have coworkers. And mm-hmm. It's just these coworkers are more visible than your dad and mom's coworkers.
And then they're like family.
And they're
Uncle
like
Patrick,
family, yeah.
Uncle Dikembe, yeah. You know, Dwayne, it really is a family. Yeah. And with just like all families, there's dysfunction.
Yeah.
You know, there are layers to that too. So I think that's a whole other conversation, but it really is a family. Like, you even saw last night.
Yeah.
You know, it's about the kids. Like, those players, I'm sure, once they won that championship and they were in their moment and in their emotions, they wanted their kids to see that.
Yeah.
They want their family to see that. They bring my baby here, you know, like, yeah. I want my kids to experience this too, because as they are at the top,
yeah.
And, you know, they say it's lonely at the top, you know, so those that are part of that climb, you want them next to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, I think this is a good way to end the recording. I remember shooting hoops during the Eastern Conference Finals in 06, and I wasn't even watching the games. Like, me and some of the other kids, we would go in the back and hoop, shooting back there, and they win, and dad calls me down on the court. And one of my favorite pictures is me, like, just like with the trophy and him and all that. And I remember I ended up getting sick during the finals.
Oh, I remember that. I was so sad for you.
Yeah, I cried. I was really sad. I got sick during the finals, and you all were on your way to Dallas to go to game six. Yeah, didn't end up making the trip, and I watch at home, and everybody's so excited. I see little Gary running around in the locker room. Now Gary's an NBA champion.
Which I'm so proud.
Which is amazing,
it's
too.
Amazing. It's amazing. Yeah. Him, little Tim.
Yeah.
Like, it really is wild. Yeah. It's beautiful.
And, like, it's I still believe that my time will come in whatever shape or form, as a player, as a coach, or executive, whatever it is, to be at a finals and experience that. I know it will. And it's just, in all of this, I know that God is working everything out for my good. So missing that moment wasn't really missing that moment. It was setting me up for something that's going to give him more glory. So I really believe that.
And we have to stop looking at things, because I've done it too. Like, I should have, could have, would. Such a waste of time.
Yeah.
And what mommy would always say, you know that. Don't look back, because you only get dust in your eyes. That's it. She would tell me that. And anytime I think of her or think of anything like, I wish maybe I should have done this different, I get dust in my eyes. I get emotional. I cry. So don't look back.
Yeah.
You know, and what was it? Something I was listening to recently when they were talking about Lot's wife.
When she looked back, turn into a pillar of salt.
Don't be like that. That's it. Don't look back.
Yeah.
Because what can you do about it? It's a waste of time. No, go forward.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I tell you too. Like, you can't control or change anything that's happened. That's hard for all of us.
Yeah.
But don't look back. It's a waste of time, and our time is so valuable and precious, and this is all we have.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you want to give.
Yeah.
You know, you can have material things, and all of that's wonderful, and I believe God wants us to be abundant, you know, but at the end of the day, it's that time.
Yeah.
How have you spent your time?
Yeah.
You know, and if you spend your time serving and glorifying God, whew, I feel like you're winning at life.
Amen.
That's why I'm so proud of you.
Thank you, Mama.
I love you, kid.
I love you, too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time watching this episode and listening to it. And God bless you.
God bless you. Who's going to watch this?
A lot of people, hopefully.
Okay. Hi, y'all. I'm so proud of you, kid.
Thank you, Mama.
I love you.
I love you, too.